Hello, this is Rita Schulte, and I will be reading you excerpts from the Bloomington Pantograph from Saturday, October 31st, Sunday, November 1st, and Monday, November 2nd. We'll begin on Saturday's paper, page A1, with a story about school evaluations, headlined Pandemic Skews School Evaluations, Spring Data Lacking, 9 McLean County Schools Exemplary. The data available on the annual Illinois report card took a hit this year after COVID-19 forced the 2019-2020 school year to be finished at home. Typically, the annual school report cards provide information about every school in the state in a number of categories, listing them by how they meet a variety of standards, including academic and test performance, and demographics. However, as the coronavirus pandemic continues to affect in-person learning, many metrics in this year's analysis are not comparable to years in the past. The Illinois State Board of Education said, "This year, COVID-19 had a significant impact on the data we normally collect for the report card," Carmen Ayala, State Superintendent of Education, told news media. Canceled spring testing cut much of the achievement data usually included on the report card, and Illinois schools were not given new rankings. On the report card issued Friday, 9 McLean County schools retained their status as exemplary, placing them among the top 10% of schools in the state. Those schools include Carlock, Towanda, Prairieland, and Grove Elementary Schools in McLean County Unit 5, Lexington Elementary and High Schools, Olympia North Elementary in Danvers, Hayworth Elementary School, and Tri-Valley High School in Downs. No data was collected for several other metrics, including student attendance and surveys on school culture and climate. A standardized method of reporting attendance was not possible in the spring during the suspension of in-person instruction, Ayala said. Some schools had access to technology, while other schools had paper packets. The majority of districts recorded high attendance rates. Ayala said more focus on strengthening attendance data will be made this year so the report card does not have the same shortcoming in 2021, despite schools still navigating remote and hybrid learning. The state superintendent also warned against comparing graduation rates against previous years, another data point affected by COVID-19, since the state requirements were adjusted for the class of 2020. Teacher hiring and retention were highlighted during a virtual news conference with the Illinois State Board of Education this week. More than 2,000 teachers were added to the workforce, and the teacher retention rate is at 86%, according to the board. The 2019 teacher retention rate statewide was about the same. Ayala said the state has prioritized teacher recruitment through grants, teacher leadership programs, and recruitment plans for educators of color. While we have increased the number of teachers, the profession remains overwhelmingly white and female. We still have much more work to do, Ayala said. 82% of teachers in the state are white, while nearly 77% identify as female. In order to diversify the teaching force across the state, Roxanne F. Owens, chair of the Teacher Education Department at DePaul University's College of Education, said universities must support students studying to be educators. "We have to help high school students and career changers see the benefits of becoming teachers. Right now, teaching is a tough sell for anyone," she said. "We need to help people see the upsides to it." Owen said programs like the Golden Apple Scholars of Illinois alleviate the financial burden of getting a college degree, for example. Connecting students to community schools early also increases their likelihood of continuing to pursue teaching, Owen said. We want our students to go into communities and see how they can help people that look just like them. That's a very powerful thing in this profession. And from the state and local page of Saturday's paper, the headline reads, Home Sales Still Strong. Bloomington Normal home sales by end of September will be up 18% from 2019. Sales of homes in Bloomington Normal are up 18% over last year, according to statistics released from the Mid-Illinois Realtors Association. With interest rates at an all-time low, home buyers continue to shop for the perfect home, said MIRA President Brandon Schaefer. We are seeing a continued need for homes as we roll into a time of year where we would typically start to see a slight decline in demand. Through the end of September, 2,371 houses had been sold in Bloomington Normal, an increase of 364, or 18.1%, over the same point last year. Of those, 2,332 homes were existing, compared to 1,974 previously owned homes sold last year, an increase of 18.1%. There have been 39 new homes sold, up 6 over last year. The average price for a home sold in the Twin City area is $175,854, a drop of 1% compared to last year's $176,106. Newly constructed homes are down 2.7% in cost. Previously owned homes are off negative 1%, selling for an average of $174,173 compared to $174,303 a year ago. In our current pandemic situations, buyers are simply spending more time in their homes for a variety of personal and professional reasons, Schaefer said. This new home-based culture has pushed consistent sales into the fall season, and there are currently no indications of a change in buyer needs going away. In September, two new homes were sold for an average price of $273,450. There were 345 previously owned homes sold for an average price of $173,000. There were 13 more existing homes sold in September than August, and the average price dropped from $177,400 to $173,000. Inventory of existing homes available remains low as well, with the current inventory numbers selling are typically seeing an immediate demand for their home, sometimes within hours of being placed on the market. Buyers are taking advantage of the loan products available as well as the very low interest rates, Schaefer said. Sellers are continuing to be successful in the sale of their home, and our local market continues to thrive. Also from page A3, the local and state page of the paper, NCHS gets FFA National Award. Normal Community High School FFA students were awarded the 93rd National Convention and Expo this week. The Normal FFA chapter of Illinois was named 2020 Premier Chapter, building communities for its project called The Beauty of Reusing. The convention had to be held virtually this year, but Normal Community Agriculture students were able to celebrate their award together when they were recognized in the National Chapter Award Program as an outstanding FFA chapter that improves net chapter operations using the National Quality FFA Chapter Standards. With the Beauty of Reusing, Normal students led an activity to educate FFA members about waste and recycling. Members were taught each person in the United States creates about 3.5 pounds of trash per day to be sent to landfills. to focus on recycling and reusing, members created 32 flower planters made from recycled materials to hand out in celebration of Mother's Day. Normal FFA was recognized during the fourth general session of the convention Wednesday for building communities, one of three award divisions. The other divisions are growing leaders and strengthening agriculture. And another article from page A3 is headlined, Judge Grants Rittenhouse Extradition. An Illinois judge on Friday ordered a 17-year-old accused of killing two demonstrators in Kenosha, Wisconsin, to be extradited across the border to stand trial on homicide charges, saying it wasn't his role to vet a case brought by Wisconsin protesters and approved by a Wisconsin judge. In his six-page written ruling rejecting Kyle Rittenhouse's bid to remain in Illinois, Judge Paul Novak noted that defense attorneys had characterized the Wisconsin charges as politically motivated. This Illinois court shall not examine any potential political impact a Wisconsin district attorney potentially considered in his charging decision, Novak wrote. He added that according to Illinois law, it is not for an Illinois judge to reevaluate probable cause determined by a Wisconsin court. The ruling came several hours after a hearing on the matter. It was not immediately clear how soon Rittenhouse might be transferred to Wisconsin or whether he might appeal. The shootings happened August 25th, 2 days after a white police officer trying to arrest Jacob Blake shot the 29-year-old black man 7 times in the back, paralyzing him from the waist down. Video of the police shooting sparked outrage and helped spur on the protests. And another headline from the same page, Butler joins time change effort. GOP lawmaker calls for ending daylight savings time in state. As the country gets ready to again adjust its clocks back to standard time, add another Illinois lawmaker to the list of those willing to consider leaving the clocks alone forever. Republican Tim Butler, a representative that is Tim Butler, Republican of Springfield, says he thinks it's worth considering whether the state should stop the practice of moving clocks ahead and backward twice each year and simply settle on permanent standard time or permanent daylight savings time. I personally like standard time because I get up earlier in the morning, he said. I think in the winter at the end of December under daylight savings time, which is what passed the Senate last year, it would be dark until almost 8:30 in the morning. Conversely, if the state moved to permanent standard time, it would be dark even earlier in the afternoon during the dead of winter. You're going to make somebody angry no matter what, Butler acknowledged. The bill mentioned by Butler is Senate Bill 533, which would put Illinois on daylight saving time year-round. The bill passed the Senate on a vote of 42-2 with 2 voting present. The bill was sponsored by Senator Andy Menar, Democrat of Bunker Hill, who took it up after some students from Carlinville High School brought the idea to him as part of a civics class project. The students testified in favor of the bill before a Senate committee. All of that happened in 2019. The bill has been sitting in the House Rules Committee since November 2019. It has bipartisan sponsorship in the House, but it is also not among the more pressing issues facing the General Assembly during the coronavirus pandemic. If the bill isn't acted on during the upcoming veto session or in early January, it will die when a new General Assembly is sworn in January. Menard could not be reached for comment. The idea of getting away from resetting the clocks twice a year has gained in popularity in recent years. The National Conference of State Legislators reported this year that more than 200 bills and resolutions were introduced in states to stay with one-time standard the year-round. Until 2018, none of them passed. However, in 2018, Florida voted to make daylight savings time the year-round standard. California voters also authorized the change, but legislation to do so is still pending. Since then, 12 other states have voted to go year-round daylight savings time. One catch on all of this is that Congress must sign off on states moving to year-round daylight savings time. If a state wants to ignore it, Hawaii and Arizona are the only ones that do, it can by act of its legislature alone. Going to full-time daylight savings time requires an act of Congress, literally. Studies have shown that changing clocks goes beyond resetting timepieces. That's why the American Academy of Sleep Science issued a report calling for the nation to move to one time standard and stay there. An abundance of accumulated evidence indicates that the acute transition from standard time to daylight savings time incurs significant public health and safety risks, including increased risk of adverse cardiovascular events, mood disorders, and motor vehicle crashes, the Academy said. Although chronic effects of remaining in daylight saving time year-round have not been well studied, daylight saving time is less aligned with human circadian biology. The Academy recommends the country go to a year-round standard time. But whether constant daylight time or constant standard time was chosen, there would be problems if state acted individually. For example, Butler acknowledged that if Illinois chose one system and Missouri another, there would be headaches for people who lived in one state but worked in the other. And from page one of Sunday's paper, the headline reads, "Almost Here, Thousands Vote Early in Bloomington Normal, Busy Tuesday is Expected." Joe McCullough was voting for the first time and decided to cast his ballot early at Grossinger Motors Arena rather than wait until Election Day. "It's my civic duty," said McCullough, 19, of Bloomington. "It's an opportunity to express how I feel, so I might as well use it. You can't complain about politicians if you didn't vote." McCullough cast his ballot last week because he was concerned that polling places will be swamped on Election Day. "With COVID, I'm being pretty cautious, and this was easy," the pharmacy technician and college student said. "It took only a few minutes. I was right in and out. It was a lot easier than I thought." Thousands of central Illinoisans have been voting early, either by mail or in person at vote centers, a trend that's being mirrored across the nation. As of Friday afternoon, 86.8 million people had voted in the presidential election, according to an Associated Press analysis of the early vote. That's 63% of the total who cast ballots in the 2016 race. COVID-19 is clearly the driving reason, as voters flock to early voting sites to avoid crowded polling places on Election Day. A new state law prompted by the pandemic sent mail-in ballots application to more than 5 million voters. There's also the ballot itself with several high-interest contests, not the least of which is the contentious race between President Donald Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden. 38% of our electorate has already cast a ballot, which is impressive, said Tim Mitchell, executive director of the Bloomington Election Commission, on Thursday. The department runs elections in Bloomington, while McLean County Circuit Clerk's office runs elections in the rest of the county. As of Thursday, the commission had mailed out 15,682 vote-by-mail ballots to people who had requested them, and 9,209 had been returned. By Thursday morning, 10,985 people had early voted in person at the arena or at Eastland Mall, and 1,820 surrendered their vote-by-mail ballots because they decided to early vote in person instead, he said. There are about 50,500 registered voters in Bloomington. "Early voting turnout is very high compared to prior years," Mitchell said. "For the March primary, we mailed out approximately 1,400 ballots and received 1,200 back, so the volume has significantly increased." For the March primary, about 2,600 people voted early in person. Case in point, as of midweek last week in Livingston County, 2,248 people had voted early in the county clerk's office as of midweek, compared to 1,571 in 2016. and 2,647 of the 3,712 vote-by-mail ballots had been returned. Prior to this, the most ballots we had received was 576 in November of 2016, County Clerk Christy Mashing said. Other key races of note. In addition to the presidential contest, there's also a proposed constitutional amendment that would change Illinois from a flat rate income tax to a graduated rate levy. That top of ballot item also could represent a referendum on voter trust in state government or how they view the state's financial future. In the Illinois legislature, all 118 seats are up for election to the Illinois House, and 20 seats are on the ballot in the 59-member state Senate. And there are elections involving the state's 18 congressional seats. Locally, in-person early voting picked up last week, and vote-by-mail numbers began to slow down as Election Day nears. Early voting opportunities continue on Monday. For example, for McLean County voters, early voting continues at the arena from 8:30 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday. All polling places will be open 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. Tuesday. Central Illinois election officials reported last week that a record number of people have voted by mail or early voted in person. In McLean County, outside of Bloomington, as of Thursday, 15,838 people had requested vote-by-mail ballots, 10,269 had been returned, and 9,023 people had voted early in person, said County Clerk Kathy Michael. All these numbers are significantly higher than in prior years, she said. The math works out to about 31% of McLean County's 61,000 registered voters outside Bloomington casting ballots as of Thursday. In Logan County, 2,530 vote-by-mail ballots had been returned, and 841 were still out, said County Clerk Teresa Moore. She said 1,650 people had voted early and in person. In November of 2016, 2,734 Logan County voters had early voted and voted by mail combined, she said. Moore said there had been no early voting issues because voters understand that they may need to wait a little longer because of social distancing recommended because of COVID-19. Michael credited dedicated election judges and federal coronavirus aid, relief, and Economic Security Act money, which allowed her to hire more election judges and add more election equipment. Knock on wood, it's going nearly perfectly well, Michael said. Things can change. We expected a big turnout, and that helped. One glitch for the Bloomington Election Commission was that a judicial retention question was accidentally left off the ballot. They ended up catching the error, but only after voting had started. For all the voters who cast a ballot prior to the correction, their ballot is valid and will be counted, Mitchell said. Impacted voters have been mailed a supplemental ballot if they wish to vote on the judicial retention question. With the election days away, what will the final tally look like? McLean County voter turnout was 70% for the November 2016 election, and Michael is expecting it to be higher this year, because voters will be asked to maintain 6-foot social distancing. Lines will be long. We're asking people to be patient, Michael said. They are also disinfecting materials and masks at polling places. We have a specially assigned health safety election judge assigned at most locations to continually monitor wiping down areas, helping with social distancing, and handing out masks if needed, she said. We're as ready as we can be, Michael said. Said Mitchell, keeping voters safe is a priority on Election Day. We will be encouraging voters to wear masks and social distance. Election results are always unofficial on election night, and that may be especially the case this year with more vote-by-ballots arriving by mail and in drop boxes, Michael said. Most election experts think the United States will see 150 million to 160 million ballots cast in 2020, which would mean that we are likely more than halfway through voting. In one state, Texas, more voters have already been votes have already been cast than in all of 2016. Back at Grossinger Motors Arena, Jacqueline Spratley, 64 of Normal, and Sherry Curry, 36 of Bloomington, were among the early voters last week. Because of my age and this pandemic that's going around, I thought this was better because people are more spread out, Spratley said. With regular voting on Election Day, there will be a lot of people. This gave me an opportunity to come at my leisure after work instead of rushing at the last minute on Election Day, said Spratley, a security guard. It went very smoothly, and I voted, she said. Curry said she voted early because I just didn't know what to expect the day of the election. I didn't want to run into any hiccups. I thought it was well organized and well set up. I was in and out. Spratley's advice to people, it's a privilege to vote, she said. Get out and vote. Don't complain about what happens if you don't vote. No vote, no voice, Curry said. And a very important reminder that appeared in Saturday's paper. Test smoke alarms. When turning back your clock on Saturday, test your smoke alarms to protect your family from home fires, the American Red Cross recommended. Home fires continue to be the nation's most frequent disaster, as about 60,000 home fires occur annually nationwide. The Red Cross recommends pressing the button on your smoke alarm and replacing the batteries if needed. Batteries should be replaced at least once a year. The Red Cross also recommends replacing smoke alarms that are 10 years or older, installing smoke alarms on every level of your home, and practicing a home escape plan with everyone in your household. Make sure everyone can get out in less than 2 minutes, including at least two ways to get out of every room, and select a meeting spot at a safe distance from your home in the event of fire. And a Crime Stoppers alert from Saturday's paper. Headline reads, Drug Delivery Suspect Sought. Crime Stoppers of McLean County needs the public's help in finding a person who is wanted for felony charges. Terry James Crumweedy, 29, is 6'1" tall and weighs 165 pounds. He has brown hair and hazel eyes. His last known address is in Normal. Crumweedy is wanted on a charge of delivery of a controlled substance. Crime Stoppers will pay cash rewards of up to $1,000 for information leading to the arrest and indictment of people who commit felony crimes in McLean County. Call 309-828-1111 if you have information about this person. Also from the crime blotter, headline reads, Police had AK-47 and drugs. A Bloomington man is in custody after police say they seized an assault rifle and more than 70 grams of drugs. Damani Seagood, 25, is charged with unlawful possession of 15 to 100 grams of cocaine with the intent to deliver, unlawful possession of 15 to 100 grams of methamphetamine with the intent to deliver, and two counts of unlawful possession of a firearm by a felon. Bloomington police said a search warrant was executed at Good's residence early Thursday morning. The Special Weapons and Tactics Team and Vice Unit officers seized 31.4 grams of cocaine, 52 grams of suspected methamphetamine, a loaded AK-47, and an undisclosed amount of cash. Mr. Good was jailed in lieu of posting $50,035 in bail, and arraignment was scheduled for November 20th. This has been Rita Schulte with part one of excerpts from the Bloomington Pantograph for October 31st, November 1st, and November 2nd. I'll be right back with part two in just a few minutes, so please stand by.